Welcome back to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. This is episode 40, where we're going to be talking about the Starblood Stalkers. We'll be reviewing every single card, including the fighter cards that come in the set, and we'll also be talking about the models. As always, this episode was made possible by our patrons. Thanks to everyone who supports us. If you're interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/pathtoglory. If that's not possible, as always, we still appreciate the listens and the ratings. This is Aman Kusro, and as always, I am joined by my skittering co-host, Jonathan Davis.
Hello, hello.
How art thou?
Skittering is something that I do, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I've just realized that every episode I'm just going to give you an adjective that has to do with the episode.
Sure, that'll work.
I started doing it like three or four episodes ago. I said ravaging.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
So it's the small things.
It's dinosaur time.
It's going to be dynamite. I'm not going to start again.
I have a dinosaur joke for you this time.
Uh-oh. Let's hear it.
What do you call a baby dinosaur?
No idea.
A wee Rex. All right, let's get into it.
No. You can't drop one, and then I'm not allowed to drop at least two in return, so.
Uh-oh. Okay.
You can guess this one, I think. What's a child's favorite dinosaur?
I don't know.
A Toys R Us.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah, I thought that was a good one. How did the Triceratops speed up his computer?
How?
He gave it a good RAM.
What is a dinosaur's favorite drink?
Oh, dude, I don't know.
Rex on the beach.
Wow. Wow, nothing will Triceratop that pun.
That's true. All right.
You laugh now, but the skeletal remains of dinosaurs don't find it humorous.
Oh my goodness.
Get it? Humor like a bone? Anyways.
I get them. I just cannot think of them. I've never been good with puns. I don't know why.
I mean, I dino what to tell you.
All right.
All right. So the Starblood Stalkers are dropping this Saturday, and Jonathan and I are very blessed and lucky. Thank you to Games Workshop for providing us with preview copies in which we can share some of our thoughts, review the cards, and just pretty much generally convince you as to why you should buy it, which the answer is you should always buy it. So
that is true.
Yeah.
Do you play the game? Yes. Then you should buy it.
Yep. Exactly. So this is more of a formality, but something that we enjoy a lot. And I've been looking forward to this one all week. So without further ado, I think, actually, before we get into the fighters, let's just talk about these miniatures. I know that you've been particularly interested in the way that they look. And some would say that this is probably the most requested warband in the history of Warhammer Underworlds. What do you think about the models, the miniatures?
I like them a lot. I've always sort of liked the lizard men as a faction. I've never actually played Age of Sigmar, the large game, but I thought about it, trying to figure out how they worked and everything, but never took the plunge. I feel like they're, in a lot of ways, they're, before Sigmarites were a thing, they were sort of the Space Marines of the Age of Sigmar, because they're, you know, beefy and stuff. But I also like the fact that they have the skinks and they have a lot of characters. So
yeah, I think when we first had these previewed, I think you mentioned that the Saurus Warrior was your favorite when we talked about it a couple episodes ago.
Maybe. I mean, I definitely think that he's really cool. I also like the guy with the spear.
Huachi.
Yeah, Huachi. He looks very excited.
Oh. Yeah, he's the hype man.
Yeah.
I still think the blow dart guy is so good. Because it just looks like he's really sucking, like about to shoot out the air in his mouth, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the poses are all really cool.
Yeah.
And they look different enough that you probably won't get them too confused, which I always think is important.
Yeah, there's four skinks, right? But technically one of them is a chameleon skink, so you'd be able to tell the difference. From the other three, they have three different weapon loadouts, so very easy to differentiate between the three models. There's no Lady Mournfly in effect here. And also, I imagine what will be Draper's Wraith Creeper effect as well.
Yeah.
All the ghosts just look the same. Well, okay, so let's jump into the fighter cards. So we're going to start with Kiki Taka, the Diviner. So he is the leader of the warband. He is not a wizard. He's got a keyword that is skink. So if there are cards that mention the skink keyword, then he is applicable. He's got 4 move, 2 dodge, 3 wounds, and he is packing some attack actions here. So his first attack action is the Starstone Staff. Range 2, 2 smash, 2 damage. So he hits pretty hard for a skink. And he's got a range 3 attack action. It's called Star Bolt. 2 smash, 1 damage. And I think one of the cooler parts, and we'll talk about the inspiration in a moment, but one of his main, I guess, ability is an action. Pick 1 feature token within 3 hexes, and then pick 1. Flip that feature token, or deal 1 damage to 1 enemy fighter within 1 hex of that token. This fighter can only make this action once per round. So, without looking at the inspiration, like, what do you think of Kiki Taka?
I think he's a very solid leader for a large warband. He's very similar to maybe Zarbag in a lot of ways. Pretty accurate attack. Range 2 is actually, you know, kind of nice, but the wound characteristic means that you're not going to be able to be too aggressive with him. So I in a lot of ways, I think about him as sort of another Zarbag, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And the interesting thing on this fighter is that when he inspires, his range attack goes to 3 smash, but that's the only change.
Yeah. Which is 3 smash on a range 2 is pretty scary. You know, once you give him a couple upgrades and stuff, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and that's his range 3 attack, actually. So his Starbolt goes to 3 smash, which is pretty neat. So let's talk about this Inspire, right? So we think he's a good leader. You know, he's got some cool tech, and we'll talk about the...
I think they both go to 3 smash, right?
No.
I'm looking at it wrong, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, very cool technical piece. He's got a lot of flavor. He's got a cool name. Let's talk about this warband's inspiration mechanic, because some would say that his action can potentially maybe work counterintuitively to the way that this warband tries to inspire. So for all of this warband, except for Clacktrock, which is the Saurus Warrior, which we'll get to next. Mm-hmm. The inspiration reads, after an activation, your warband holds 3 or more objectives. What do you think?
It's interesting. Basically, I think you have to think about this in the same way as you would think about temporary victory. You know, you're really going to want to invest to set it up. You know, unlike temporary victory, you're always going to want to try to do this as soon as possible. You will have it in the first round, so to speak, you know. So you know, it's going to be a little swingy, but it should be reasonably reliable as well. It's very powerful, I think.
Yeah, I think it's actually a great inspiration. And when it's made as an inspiration, I think it's pretty balanced. Because as a card, it can be a little frustrating because there's like a glory element involved. But for this, it's both players are very aware at the beginning of the match what the Seraphon player needs to do. Mm-hmm. And it's game on from the, you know, from the first dice off. And I find that quite interesting because, you know, sometimes you want to give the larger warband the objective so you can take the superior board setup and just like charge into them.
Yeah.
But in this situation, it might be counterintuitive to do so because unlike the Grimwatch, or it's actually similar to the Grimwatch in that they like to stay in their territory if you've given them the 3 objectives. However, I think they're fast enough to where they can, you know, venture out into your territory as well. They all are pretty quick, but I think there's a lot to think about, and I really like the complexity behind it because it's not so simple, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think it will be swingy. I think there will be games, you know, similar to when Thorns were running Temporary Victory, where, you know, they do get the three objectives and, you know, maybe you're not able to block one, or, you know, they're able to push you off and they inspire, you know, pretty much right away if they have the right pushes. But sometimes it'll also take three activations and, you know, they may not even get it off in the first round. So, but it's a big power swing, I think, when they do get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm looking forward to the way people play around this.
Yeah.
I think there might, we might see some, if these guys are popular, which I think they might be, because A, they look amazing, but two, I mean, there's actually a crazy fan following for this faction, but yeah. Also because, and I think they're going to be pretty powerful, and we'll take a look at why in a little bit, but we might see more objective tech similar to Beast Grave moving forward, because, you know, we might see Restless Pies being taken more often. I mean, we already went over Living Land in the previous episode. You know, Slick Rock might see more use. You might see more Nightmare in the Shadows. I think there's going to be more tech, which is always fun, I think, in this game.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the cool thing about the ability that Kixitaka has is that just by existing, and then if this warband is pretty powerful, that's actually going to be pretty good against the Feed the Beast Grave style, which is, I think, right now one of the kind of annoying things that objective warbands have to deal with. And I think also because of their inspire condition, I think that this this warband's probably going to be a generally an objective style warband, because they have to be on three at some point anyway, so they might as well, you know, build to hold and push onto them and things like that.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely correct. It's going to be fun. I'm really excited. Let's jump to some of the other fighters here. We've got Clackdrock, and this is the big boy on the block. He's the Saurus Warrior.
Yeah.
And man, he is packing some stats. So
yeah, he really is.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about this Alpha Predator right here. So we've got 3 move, 1 block. 4 wounds. Makes sense. This fighter inspires when they make a successful attack action.
Yeah.
This fighter also has a reaction ability. So it's called Powerful Jaws. This attack action's characteristic cannot be modified, but reaction. After this fighter's activation, this fighter makes the Powerful Jaw attack action. The Powerful Jaw attack action is 1 fury, range 1. 1 damage. And you're thinking, okay, you know, not bad, makes sense. But then you look at his primary weapon, which is a Celestite Warmaul. It's range 1, 2 smash, 3 damage.
Yep.
So this bad boy can technically one-shot a 4-wound fighter off a charge.
Yeah, that's true. It's not a giant chance to happen, but it's going to happen.
It's going to happen when you least want it to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And he's insane. And we haven't even got to the inspired side yet. Going to the inspired side, he gets a bump in movement. So now he's movement 4. He's on 2 block instead of 1. He stays at 4 wounds. His Warmaul stays the same, but his jaw ability goes to 2 fury. So now you're hitting around the same chance as a Gore Shields.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about this bad boy?
It's almost like he is like Ripa's Snarl Fangs combined with like
Kagra
or something. Yeah. Like he's really a beast. He's scarier than a lot of like leaders and stuff. Yeah. I think his main limitation is going to be, you know, he'll probably only get 1, you know, charge because he is range 1. He'll get 1 charge around. But man, if he hits that first attack or the second attack, I guess, his inspire just turns into a, you know, just a tank. So,
yeah.
And then you're going to just put him right up front and,
I mean, very, very cool. He's like, this is the one reason why you don't want to charge into this warband off the bat, because Clackdrock will eat you.
Yeah.
But also, this is a powerful offensive tool for you trying to venture out and get that third or second objective in enemy or no man's land. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this guy right here is not to be messed with. He is an apex predator. And honestly, I'm not even mad about how strong he is, because he is literally a, like, walking, muscular, like, dinosaur dude. And as a Saurus warrior, you know, as someone who has been entrusted to support Kiki Tok on his mission to destroy the Beast Grave, like, it doesn't get, you don't get more, you know, badass than this guy. So, I'm digging it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, he's only one fighter and he's only range one. So I think that, you know, it's okay if he's a stat ball, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other weak fighters in this warband. So it's not like, I feel like it has, it may have less impact. You can probably ignore him if you need to.
Yeah. I mean, you could, most certainly. I mean, yeah, the range one is nice. He's not like the Briar Queen style where it's like ping everything.
Yeah, that would be terrifying.
But yeah, he's good. And yeah, you know, it's... it's something you're going to have to plan for sure.
Yeah.
The next fighter. So we're going to start with Huachi, because out of the three skinks, he's like the squad leader.
Yeah.
He's the guy hoisting the spear in the air. So he's got a keyword. He's a skink. Go figure. And he's a hunter.
Yeah.
So he starts with four move. He's on one block because he's got a shield. And he's got two wounds. Again, he shares the Inspire mechanic with Kiki Taka, and he's got a reaction called Skittish. After an opponent's power step, push this fighter one hex away from an enemy fighter within two hexes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pause right there. What do you think about that?
I think it is potentially very strong. It's interesting. And the opponent's power step, I believe, is the power step after their activation. So basically, you get to use this right before you get to activate.
Correct.
Or perhaps at the end of the round if you ended up going first. So it's interesting because it means your opponent has a, you know, some control over it. Most likely, the opponent put themselves close to your fighter, and they can also position themselves in a way that they know where farther away is. But it also means that you can, you know, send your fighter in, and then after the next activation, maybe you can slide onto an objective or something like that. So I think it's definitely powerful, but I like how it's not like you can just charge. You can't charge in and then then after that power step, you know, slide onto an objective or something like that. It actually takes a while after you activate before you can do it, because it's actually before you activate. That's how I'm reading it.
You're absolutely correct. So in the rule book, it says, after a player's activation, it is time for that player's power step. Players take it in turn to play a power card or pass by saying pass, starting with the player whose power step it is.
Cool. Yeah, that's what I thought.
So you'll get to skitter right before your activation begins.
Exactly, yeah. So, and if you go first, then it's not going to be until after your opponent's, you know, first activation that you get your first skitter. So it'll be interesting to see how you plan for it, because you have to start planning for it kind of a long time before you actually get to do it. So I think that'll be a cool aspect of this warband.
Yeah, there's a lot of premeditation here.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool.
And as the opponent, you're going to have to be careful where you position your fighters, knowing that the fighters may be able to skitter onto things. So
Yeah, so, you know, aggressive warbands might be put in a pickle if they just start getting they start charging with range one or range two attack action. So they're in, you know, I think there might be a way to creatively defeat that, or maybe start playing warbands with access to ranged attacks, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Something to think about. Let's go ahead and finish this fighter off. So he's got a meteoric javelin that's thrown. So he can throw the javelin. Range 3, 2 fury, 1 damage. But I guess he can also use it in melee. So this is the meteoric javelin, parentheses, melee.
Mm-hmm.
1 range, 2 smash, 2 damage. So hits a little bit harder or pokes a little bit harder when he's right next to you.
Yeah, and more accurate, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yep. More accurate. Well, yes, yeah. Well, 2 fury, 3 fury, 2 smash, technically 3 fury. Oh, this is 2 fury, uninspired, correct. You're right.
Yeah.
So, interestingly enough, when Huachi inspires, he jumps to 5 movement. So, He's on Skaven levels of speed. He stays on the same defensive characteristics, and the only other change is that his thrown weapon is 3 Fury. It gains knockback 1. Everything else stays the same.
Yeah, so far, I would say they have somewhat minimal inspired stats, which is probably good given how I think sometimes their inspire condition can be pretty quick.
Yeah, or opposite could be challenging to do.
Yeah,
you know, if you've got an opponent who can stop your inspire, you may lose a bit of accuracy or maybe damage, but generally, the essence of the fighter is still there.
Yeah, it's also interesting how he's on one block, because I would say, you know, compared to some of the other larger warbands, one block is certainly better than one dodge. But of course, you would rather have two dodge when you inspire, you know, which a lot of other warbands get. So it's kind of an interesting middle ground looking at this two wound fighter, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely think so. From what we're seeing so far, this it looks like a lot of the feedback that may have been given for Thorns and Grimwatch has been applied here in that the fighters are all very unique and cool and do some really cool things, but they're not necessarily overstatted or understatted in some cases as well, right? Like, they seem fair, and they look like the models, the miniatures look like their stats, which I think is cool.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So the next skink we're going to talk about is... So, I don't know how to pronounce X in Spanish, or like ancient Aztecan, but I'm just going to go with Zepic, but it could be Kepic. I think it is actually is Kepic, but we're going to say Zepic.
Okay.
So, Zepic is a skink and a hunter, 4 move. He is also on one block.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 2 wounds, same inspiration. He's got Skittish, and he's got the Moonstone Club, which is range 1, 2 Fury, 1 damage.
Yeah.
So pretty simple. He's kind of like, for lack of a better term, one of the weaker fighters. I'm actually not going to use the phrase that you want to use because I don't think it's a good phrase. There'll be no DBs around. We're going to then inspire him. So he's going to go to 5 movement. He stays on one block. And his Moonstone Club goes up to 3 Fury, 2 damage. So I think Zepic probably benefits the most thus far from the inspire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Finishing the last of the regular skinks, we've got Tok. Skink Hunter, 4 move. He's got 1 dodge, because he's got no shield. 2 wounds. Same inspire. He's got Skittish. And he's got a Bolt Spitter, so it's 3 Fury. So it's 3 range, 2 Fury, 1 damage. And then a Moonstone Club, which is 1 range, 2 Fury, 1 damage. When he inspires, he goes to 5 move. He goes to 2 dodge, which is nice. And his attack is... Bolt Spitter attack stays the same, but his Moonstone Club goes to 3 Fury, but it's still dealing only 1 damage.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about the Skink Bros?
So, obviously, they're not the best fighters in the game. It's interesting looking at their stats, how they're going to be on 2 Fury a lot of the time, it seems like. What that does mean is maybe you're going to want to be using the Skittish reaction to get support when you can, because that obviously increases the accuracy quite a bit. It also means that these may be the fighters that you use to hold the backline objectives until you can inspire, and then their attacks become a little bit more reliable. I would say Zepic is probably in general a little bit better, but having a range 3 3 Fury attack to knock somebody around, or that can be useful as well. So that with the some of the stats on some of the other fighters, I don't think it's a bad thing that these two are relatively weak, but they're fast, and you give them the right weapon and stuff, I think they're going to be pretty useful.
Yeah, I definitely think these are your objective holders, right? I mean, Huachi can get aggressive. Huachi reminds me a lot of it's not Gnarl from the Despoilers. More.
Oh, yeah.
Morquish? No.
I know who you're talking about. Name?
You know, the guy who's like drawing the dagger across his chest?
Yeah.
It's going to kill me. Hold on. His name is Morgoth Halfhorn.
Morgoth, yeah. I wanted to say Morgok, but I knew that was wrong.
Yeah, it's a Morgoth. It's a Balrog of Morgoth.
Yeah.
So he looks good. in terms of that similar flexibility style where you can get like an extra like third aggressive fighter if you need it. But yeah, these guys are definitely chilling, holding it down while Clacktrock mows everyone down and Kikitaka does his thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It's almost fair to say Clacktrock is overstatted, but it's fair when you look at the rest of the stats, right? Aside from Huachi, like Zepic and Tok aren't something to write home about.
Yeah, and even Huachi really just has like a pretty standard attack. Like you're not sad to use 2 smash, 2 damage, but it's not really anything to write home about. And he is going to die if he gets hit, so.
That's true. He's only got 2 wounds. The last fighter is one that I find very interesting. Mm-hmm. So this is Ottapodal. He was previewed, I think, first out of everyone.
Yeah, I think so.
Fun fact, not only is a skink and a hunter, but he is also the second innate quarry in this game.
Yeah, yeah.
So very cool. Kind of makes sense. You know, maybe it's a defense mechanism, you know, to be a chameleon so you don't get eaten. So I like how that's translated in a rule. He's got 4 move. He starts with 2 dodge. Mm-hmm. And he's 2 wounds. Same inspire mechanic as the majority of the warband. But he's got a really, really cool attack action. Yeah, so he's got... Yeah, it's very, very cool. So it's called the Dart Pipe. It's a range 3 attack. You roll 3 dice, but it only hits on crits. So this is the first fighter in the game whose innate attack action hits on a critical.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. I think we've seen like maybe a weapon upgrade or a spell or something in the past that hits on crits, but this guy only hits on crits unless he has support.
Yeah, if you're hitting with this guy, you're most likely, you know, getting through.
Mm-hmm.
So this attack also has cleave and ensnare.
Yeah.
So if he crits you, you can only crit back. And I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. But that's not why this attack is cool. Well, it's one of the reasons. But the main reason is the Dart Pipe has a special rule. The target of this attack action cannot be driven back by this attack action.
Mm-hmm.
If this attack action succeeds, give the target 1 move token.
Yeah, very interesting. It does mean that if you tie, like if they crit your crit, then it's sort of like you failed because you can't even drive back and you can't trap. So that is a thing, I guess. But a move token is so powerful. And if you can get Ottapodal in the middle of an enemy warband or something, that's really scary.
Yeah, this guy, so I feel like he, so it's really cool, right? I really like the vibe that he gives off. But I also think that he's going to have like a Griswold type effect where it's like, if your opponent starts high rolling a little bit, you're in for a bad day.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what the math is on just the straight up, you know, 3 dice crit attack, but I want to say it's probably a little under 40%, or maybe right around 40. Because I think you have 40% chance or 45-ish to roll a crit at all. And then there's a chance they'll crit you out and then a chance that you might double crit them. So I want to say it's right around 40. But if once you start adding supports, which I think this warband may be pretty good at, this is much, much more reliable.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a great candidate for another card that we talked about the other day on our last episode where you pretty much get a reroll on range attack.
Yeah. Eagle Eye, I think.
That's right. Yep. So an Eagled Eye Ottapodal is one to be feared.
And that's a pretty good card for this warband in general, because you have a number of ranged 3 fighters. You have 3 of them. So it's pretty cool. Or 4 of them, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So very cool stuff here. Then we've got his inspired side. So he moves to 5. He gets 3 dodge, which is gnarly, but it makes sense. He's a chameleon skink. Their whole shtick is to, you know, they're there and you can't even see them.
Yeah.
The damage on his ability goes up to 2 damage, which is wild, but guess he's using his poison darts now in his little frog pouch, which is amazing. So
he goes to 5 move. I don't know if you said that.
I did. Okay, yeah. But yes, you're absolutely correct. So this guy is nuts because in theory, you want to kill him immediately,
yeah,
right? Like you almost want to prioritize him over Clacktrock.
Yeah.
But it's funny because if he survives, he's like, he can just go off. He can, you know, he can start mowing down goblins, squigs, chain wraps, ghouls, like.
Yeah, or just like locking up Hrothgorn or locking Malog. Up Magors. Like you, if he's around past the probably second round, like, I think you're just in a lot of trouble.
This is this the Malog killer we've all been waiting for?
Maybe.
Autopoddle, the crit lord.
I guess it just depends how good you are at rolling crits. So
he's a critosaurus.
Yeah.
Well, so we've covered the whole warband, six fighters, an interesting number for a whole objective warband, but you can Clackjaw counts as two for sure. So pretty solid, larger warband. Has the benefit against other horde warbands in that they'll deploy faster, so they'll, you know, win the roll off as well, which is pretty neat. What do you think about them holistically just from the fighters?
Just based on the fighters, I think they seem pretty powerful. I think that their inspire condition is reliable because it's something that you can work towards. I do think that your enemy may invest a little bit in stopping you, but I expect that they'll probably inspire at some point in the first round. I think Clackjaw, you know, is very likely to inspire. You know, probably 50% of the time he's going to inspire in the first round, and then just be super annoying.
Yeah, once he gets the two block, it's hard to take him down.
But, you know, they're not, other than Clackjaw being on two block, I wouldn't say that they're that hard to kill. Mainly, like, if you think you need a kill, I think you should probably be able to get one, because the three not special skinks, I guess, you know, are going to be pretty easy to kill. They'll probably be hiding in the back, but it's hard to hide all of them in the back with so many fighters. I think you probably also want to hide Autopoddle because you don't want him just dying randomly at the beginning. So you probably have to risk Ta, Kawachi, and Zepic a little bit. So I think that's interesting. I like six fighters in general. I think it's a good number. I think five and six are probably my favorite. I like that you have one starting hect you can not use. I think they have pretty good stats. I mean, they have a good variation of damage, and they have a lot of range, which is good, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree with a lot of the things you said there. For me, I think the fact that there's so much utility baked into this warband just from these fighters alone is really cool. You've got a control element in both Kiki Taka and Autopoddle, because you can flip objectives, you can damage fighters with ping damage, and then you can also, you know, start slapping on move tokens. I think we've talked enough about Clackjaw's ability to be extremely aggressive. And so he's a big thorn. He's a big threat that you're going to have to figure out very quickly. And then you've got three fighters who have the ability to engage if needed, but generally are going to be holding objectives. And they have the skittish reaction, which is, again, super technical. It's a control ability. I think this is a very cool warband, and while you can play them aggressively, like, I think they're the ultimate control/hold objective warband, because they'll control you, they'll make sure the board state works for them, they'll inspire, and they'll score more glory than you in the end phase, and Clackjaw will probably wipe out at least one to two of your fighters. So,
yeah, I think they seem pretty good. I think that they're going to play sort of like Gitzwood, but with less fighters. The skittish thing kind of reminds me of Scurry. There'll be some sliding around, but I think it's cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. So with that out of the way and giving some early reactions to the warband's physical features, let's talk about the actual, I guess, why the reason we're all here, right, is for the cards. And so, Jonathan, could you go ahead and kick us off with the first objective card?
Absolutely. So the first objective card is Astromatrix Alignment. Astromatrix Alignment. It is a surge for one glory, and it says score this immediately when you flip a feature token in enemy territory. So that's pretty interesting.
I honestly like the way you said fleep.
Fleep.
Are we fleeping
objective tokens? I don't think I can talk today.
My name Borat. I like to flip things. Flippy, flippy.
Astromatrix.
I watched that movie the other night because,
yeah.
Side note, he got like the girl who played his daughter got nominated for an Oscar.
Oh.
And I was like, no way. And, you know, so I just was like, I'm going to watch this. And she did a really good job. It's a lot of cringe humor, but,
yeah,
you know, it's Borat. So, yeah, this is an interesting card because
mm-hmm.
we're starting to see a lot of flip tech in this game.
Yeah, we are.
We've got Kiki Taka, who can innately flip things as well. And the best part is that it doesn't require a roll or a card to flip. Right. As long as he flips it within three hexes, this gets scored. Now, you do have to expose him a little bit because he's in enemy territory, but, I mean, you know, I guess you can build some redundancy in your deck, but, I mean, I think this is a great card for them.
I think
it's a surge.
I think it's pretty good if you have another way to flip objectives, because I think later on in the game, it might be tricky, and if he dies, then... you know, it's going to be a dead card. I have been thinking, though, that with the amount of flipping that is in the game, it might be a good idea to throw lethal snares in a lot of decks that care about objectives. And so maybe that's enough backup where, you know, you have two ways to do it, so maybe it's doable. I'm personally not convinced that it's better than some of the other options, like the speed package or some of the hold objective surges. But I think it's definitely a tool to keep. And if you want to do a Feed the Beast Grave, because Kixi Taka's, you know, ability is pretty unique, then I think you definitely take it.
Yeah, the Feed the Beast Grave conversation is pretty interesting. It's yeah. kind of almost like an... This is probably a good example of a fringe tactic, right? From our previous end phase episode,
mm-hmm.
where you might take a control-ish hold objective warband and you might play a very... Almost the opposite. Destroy all the objectives instead.
yeah.
Or at least flip them. But yeah, I agree that they're better universal options. And of course, you'd want redundancy in the deck. The rule of three always applies. But the fact that Kiki Taka counts as one of those is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So the next one is Balance of the Cosmic Equation. It is a single glory hybrid end phase. Score this in the end phase if there are two or more enemy fighters out of action, or your warband holds more objectives than any other warband. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, this one's cool because you're going to start games off where you're hitting attacks
mm-hmm.
with Clacktrog and maybe Huachi or Kiki Taka, and you're going to just eliminate enemy fighters. And that's fun. But also, like, dominant position is, like, in this game, everyone's going to play for it if you can physically. And I think it slots perfectly into this deck, into this warband. And so maybe getting three glory for holding more objectives than your opponent, you know, because you count the two and the one, seems really good to me. I think this is a great card. It's one glory. So, you know, if you're wanting to fill your objective deck out with bigger scores, then maybe you pass on this because technically it is just a weaker version of dominant position.
Right.
But, you know, I don't mind seeing this go into the deck.
Yep, I agree completely. If it was two glory, it'd be amazing. But if I'm going to take a one glory card, I think this will be it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how you solve that cosmic equation.
Exactly. The next one is Children of Azir. It is two glory. It's a dual end phase. Score this in the end phase if each surviving friendly fighter is inspired and... surviving friendly fighters have three or more upgrades. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so I actually like this one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I generally don't like score this if your warband is inspired. But this is actually really good here because Clacktrog has two chances every attack action to inspire. So that might happen, or he might just die, which is fine. I guess. But the biggest thing here is your warband will all inspire at once, except for Clacktrog. So that'll happen eventually. Probably, as you mentioned, in the first round,
because
you're going to tech for it. And then at that point, you're just stacking on upgrades. And it doesn't say that they all have to be on one fighter. They just have to be alive. So you can spread them around. You can stack them all on one fighter. You can do two in one. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You just got to have three and you're good to go and you get two glory and it's nice.
Yeah, I think it's a very powerful card. I think that a lot of the time by the second round, you should be able to score this. And yeah, sometimes in the first round.
Sometimes, yeah.
Just depends on what your power card's hands are and if you're able to get everybody inspired. So it's cool. The next one is Formidable Focus. It's a one glory surge. Score this immediately after an activation if three or more friendly fighters are in enemy territory. So it's sort of like, what's that card called?
Show of Force.
Show of Force. Yeah, half. It's the one side of Show of Force.
The other card is the other side of Show of Force. Yeah, the one that we just talked about.
Yeah.
So in a way, Show of Force works perfectly with both of these objectives. There's the synergies there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure though if you want to take this card. Obviously, it's easy, right? You take the speed package and then you just run around and you move stuff and maybe you get objectives and that's cool.
Yeah.
But I think you're going to want to, I think the objective based surges are just probably better.
I agree. I agree. And Show of Force is definitely better.
Yeah. Cause Show of Force has that secondary condition, which is the condition that more often than not is scored in most games I've seen and watched and played in.
Yeah.
So I think this is like middle of the road.
Yep. I think it's certainly playable, but it does kind of control the way that you play. And there may be better options. So, the next one is Heralds of Annihilation, one glory surge. Score this immediately after an activation in which a friendly fighter made an attack action that took an enemy leader out of action. So it's another leader killing card. I think we just talked about some of these the other day. Not very good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's actually a carbon copy of one of the universals that's coming out. Yeah. And, you know, I think the same thoughts apply. I mean, it's kind of cool. You probably kill the enemy leader at one point in the game. You might not, though, because they're pretty well protected. But again, killing the enemy leader, having this card in your hand, same time, not really efficient.
Yeah, just a little bit too specific, and you have to have the card. So, the next one is Instinctive Tactics. One glory surge, score this immediately after resolving your warband's second or subsequent reaction in the same phase. In a warband where I think all but one of them has a reaction.
Yeah. No, this is actually kind of... Yeah. This is exactly like the Eltharion's Guardians card.
Yeah.
So, you know, we see similar card here. It was good for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they only had two reactions in that warband. Actually, three. This warband has four fighters out of six.
They all had one.
Did they? Did Skathal have one?
Uh-huh. Yeah, if he crits, he does an extra damage on his attack.
He just always died for me, so maybe that's why I don't remember.
He always dies, yep.
Yeah, he's the one you want to die anyways, I think.
And he's only two smash, so he almost never crits. That's how it seems for
that's
me.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess I never really considered him when trying to score that card. So, yeah, you mentioned, you know, four out of six fighters have a reaction. So, like, you just charge with Clactrock, you make your reaction. It doesn't matter if it hits Skitter later, or you play a Gambit or upgrade with a reaction. Easy money, A+ card, take it, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you still need to have some reactions in your deck because I don't think Skittish is that reliable. It takes some setting up and it kind of takes your opponent helping you do it. But with a couple reactions in the deck and then Skittish, you know, as a bonus and the extra attack, I think it's pretty reliable. So I think we'll see a lot of it. The next one is Perfect Warrior. This is a dual end phase for one glory. It says, score this in an end phase if there is a friendly surviving Clactrock and each enemy leader is out of action. Huh. What do you think about that one?
It's thematic. It's cool. It makes sense. Yeah. For one glory, I just don't know if it's worthy the planning.
Yeah, it's probably not. The next one is Seeking the Heart, two glory, hybrid. Score this in an end phase if each surviving friendly fighter is in enemy territory, or your warband holds each objective in enemy territory.
That's some hard to do. I'm just rereading the card again. Score this in an end phase if each surviving friendly fighter is in enemy territory, or your whole warband holds each objective in enemy territory. Yeah, no, that's I mean, you could probably maybe do this with, like, I can see where they're going, because there are some other cards that we just talked about that focus on getting an enemy territory. You've got Show Force. You could maybe take Treasure Hunters. So I get the synergy there, but...
And Bold Deeds did also just come out.
That's right. But ultimately, I think this is counterintuitive to the way that I think I would play the Warband. So for me,
yeah,
I don't think this is a good card.
Yeah, and it's interesting. The Slaanesh have a similar, some similar cards that really, really, you know, reward them for going aggressive into the enemy Warband's territory. And I know people have had success with that style. So it'll be interesting to see if they sort of leverage these cards to do that as well. But I agree that it's probably not how I would play them.
Yeah.
The next one is Sotex Hunters, One Glory Surge. Score this immediately after an activation in which a friendly fighter made a range 3+ attack action that took an enemy fighter out of action. What do you think about that?
I think this is a great card for Profiteers.
Yeah, that's true.
But so let's look at the fighter cards again, right? So we've got Kikitaka.
Mm-hmm.
When he's inspired, he's still only doing 1 damage. With his ranged attack. We look at Autopoddle. He is only hitting on crits, so you can't rely on it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We've got Tok, who is only doing 1 damage at range.
Yeah.
And then we've got Huachi, who can do... I actually only think he's doing 1 damage at range as well. So,
yeah.
Given those obvious, you know, fighter profiles, I just don't think you take this.
I think you're forgetting the Hungering Harpoon. No.
Yeah, if I could smack you through this
computer, I would. Yeah, I agree. It's okay, but like you probably will get some kills with range 3 attacks over the course of the game, but it's not reliable. So, the next one is The Great Plan. It is 3 glory. It's a duel. Score this in an end phase if you have scored 6 or more objective cards and you have scored 1 or more surge objective cards, 1 or more dual objective cards, and 1 or more hybrid objective cards. So kind of like Set the Tempo, but maybe way better.
I actually love this card.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. A, it reminds me of Tactical Supremacy from the first 2 seasons. It's a great end phase score. It doesn't have to be in the third end phase, so that's an immediate improvement there. And we've already talked about some cards that exist, and there you can probably fit in a very effective and probably good, if not great, card in their deck that's at least 1 surge. You're going to take 6. 1 dual and 1 hybrid. I mean,
yeah.
And it doesn't say that these dual or hybrid cards have to be end phase cards. So you could have like 6 surges and they could be duels and hybrids, or contain at least 1 dual or 1 hybrid, right. Then maybe have at least 1 dual or 1 hybrid in your non-surges. This is amazing. This is a great card.
Yeah.
This is good.
It's really good. I almost think you could take this and Set the Tempo together. That might be a little greedy.
It's greedy.
But everything that you need for Set the Tempo, this card will also be perfectly fine with. And this card's a duel. So if you have them both, you can actually score the duel, and then you can score Set the Tempo as one of the duels. So I don't know. I think we might see that. It'd be interesting. But it's clearly very good. It may even be better than the old... Superior Tactician, if you have the right deck, because you're going to get it in the second round a lot of the time.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Again, like, I think this is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm hyped.
Yeah.
This is going in my deck.
Yeah, very cool. The next one is Vengeance of the Heavens. It's a 2 glory end phase. Score this in an end phase if there are more enemy fighters out of action than there are surviving enemy fighters. So basically kill more than half the warband. I like these cards quite a bit. What do you think about this one?
So I'm not as high as them as you are.
Yeah.
On them, I think sometimes they'll happen, sometimes they won't.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best way to play this warband is scoring off objectives, glory multipliers, as we just mentioned, and then controlling your opponent, whether that's through move tokens or just flat out killing them,
yeah,
or flipping objectives. So for me, this probably will not make the cut, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how well you potentially can do with it.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest knock against this card for me is that the one we just talked about, the Great Plan, is better. And I don't know if I take both of them, because it is still at least a second, if not third, end phase card most of the time. So,
yeah.
Let's see. The next one is Will of the Slan for 2 glory. Score this in an end phase if your warband holds 1 or more objectives in 2 or more players' territory.
This is just Swift Capture, but an end phase card, but you get 2 glory.
Yeah, that's very, very good.
Very good card. Fantastic card. The only so now that I'm thinking about the Great Plan a lot, I'm almost wondering if you just take a full hybrid dual deck. I don't know if that's efficient enough, but like, if you get the Great Plan early, you don't want like it to clog up your hand. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, like, now I'm looking at all these cards we just talked about, and I'm like, you know, it's good, but like, does it work with the Great Plan?
So for me, when I'm playing Set the Tempo, I like to have 3 of each, dual and hybrid. Yes, for sure.
And not more.
I feel like with the Great Plan, you could get away with 2 of each, and you would score it eventually. But I think 3 of each is still going to be the sweet spot there.
Yeah.
So I think you're still going to be able to fit a couple other cards in there, because there are some really good dual and hybrid cards you're going to want to take anyway, like Path to Victory and Swift Capture and maybe Show of Force. You know, so I bet that you can make it work. And you may even be able to do 2 of one and 3 of the other. So I think it just depends on how, you know, early you want to be able to score the Great Plan.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, like, I'm trying to think of all the universal cards you want.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, is this better than, like, Dominant Position or some of the other cards? Like, don't get me wrong. I think this is a great card.
Yeah.
And it'll probably go into your deck more often than not. But I'm just trying to, I'm just like, the cogs are turning a little bit. And so I think I'll probably need to sit down afterwards and just start building something. But
yeah.
I think for the purposes of this rating, I think this is a good card.
I think it is too. I think we'll see this one for sure. I think it's just going to depend on what your focus is on, you know, holding objectives and how aggressive you want to be. Let's see. And that is the last of the objectives.
Yeah. So, I think we saw some really good cards in here, some okay, but none of them are unplayable, I don't think, which is awesome.
Yeah, not really. There's a few for getting kills and sort of mainly the 2 for killing the leader that I think, you know, aren't quite worth taking, but I think a lot of the other ones you could at least consider.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite, and don't you dare say the Great Plan?
If it's not that one, then
you can say it. It's fine. If it's your favorite, it's your favorite.
Well, I think that one is probably the one that we'll see the most of, but I think that, let's see. I think I do like, Will of the Slan quite a bit, holding an objective in each territory.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. I think it goes well with Clacktrock and, some of the other strategies. So Swift Capture, you know, think like that.
Yeah. I guess if the Great Plan is the obvious one, then I think I'll go for Instinctive Tactics.
Yeah.
The 2 reactions, I think that's pretty solid.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Okay. Well, I think we've started out strong with the Starblood Stalkers. It's a theme here. Let's see if the ploys can stack up. Starting with Burst from the Shadows. Choose up to 2 friendly hunters. Push each chosen fighter up to 2 hexes. Keep in mind that all the skinks are hunters.
Except for the leader, yeah.
Well, yeah. I guess I should have said non-leader skinks, but yes.
Sure. Yeah, this is amazing, obviously.
Yeah, this is a 4 out of 4. It's a great card. I mean, there's just so much flexibility, aggressively, defensively, trying to inspire. It's nuts. Yeah.
And we've seen this card before with the Grimwatch and the Despoilers, and it's just really, really, really good. So.
Yeah,
I actually didn't realize until just now how much this warband kind of meshes onto the Despoilers.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
I think they're just way better. They have a sneaky guy. They have a big guy. They have some little guys.
Yeah, well, at least the big guy looks. Well, I guess that's true. Even the big guy looks like he could be the leader of the warband. It's wild.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's a great card, and I think that parallel is a very apt one. And you know what? Grashrax to spoilers, while they... I thought they were a lot of fun to play.
Yeah.
To figure out. I know you did. You enjoyed them as well, and they did pretty solid at one point in Beastgrave. They got second in an online clash, so
yeah.
I think there's, you know, if that's what we're comparing the Seraphon to, but obviously these are significantly better than, you know... That's an ominous sign in terms of how powerful this warband might be. So very cool.
Yeah. And for me, the big problem with the spoilers is their inspire condition. And I don't think these guys have that problem. So
not with Burst from the Shadows. You good, bro?
Exactly.
So the next card is Huachi's Device.
Mm-hmm.
Pick one enemy fighter. Pick one enemy fighter or pick an opponent. That player must push three fighters from their warband one hex. If they have fewer than three surviving fighters, they must push each surviving fighter one hex.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. You go ahead. Go ahead. And
so, you know, at its worst, it's distraction. If you want to push somebody, you can. But then there's the crazy second option where you let the other player decide to push three fighters. And... that's going to be the interesting one. Like, it's already amazing because it's distraction. But the second half of it is going to be going to have all kinds of interesting, like, complications on when it's better to use that one than to control who you push. What do you think about it?
This card is insane.
Yeah.
So the push one enemy fighter, one hex, obviously, as you mentioned, distraction. So now two distractions. This is going to auto include for sure. So you have two distractions in your deck now because you take distraction. And then the second condition is really interesting because if you're playing against an objective-based warband,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you've whittled down some of the warband, or maybe, you know, they have at least, you know, a certain number of fires that they need to hold the warband, and
right.
you say, hey, you know what? You can just push three of your fighters wherever you want. I don't mind.
Yeah.
And then one of them has to leave the objective. Or like a lethal or whatever they were trying to hold, or like pushes them out of enemy territory. You know, like, well, actually, I guess they'd never push themselves out of enemy territory. Right. But you get what I'm saying? Like, it's pretty good.
Well, what's so interesting about it, though, is that I think there's going to be a lot of times when you don't want to push. You don't want to let them push three fighters. Because let's say you're against Thorns of the Briar Queen. If they're only holding three objectives, then they need to have... three, four, five. They need to have, you know, five fighters for you to force them to remove one. So it would be better just to, you know, push the one that you want, because then the other two guys are going to move in positions that they like.
No, I completely agree. Like, I would say 90% of the time you're going to just use as a distraction.
Right. But late game,
there's going to be some. Yeah.
If they have four fighters, then it's amazing.
Yeah. If you, there's going to be like beautiful teed up, like. Home run, like three bases loaded. Like, this is going to be one of those situations where, like, game breaking, demoralizing, defeating your opponent, kicking them while they're on the ground. Like, this can be nuts.
I think we can just say
in the right situation.
Tommy is going to do some mean things with this card.
I don't think it's just going to be Tommy. Yeah. I think the moment you start figuring this out, it's everybody's going to be doing some really mean stuff with this card.
Yeah.
Because, you know, given the right circumstances, and yeah, sure, you know, some players, like Tommy, might be able to figure it out faster, but there's going to be some gnarly stuff here, and I'm terrified and excited at the same time.
Yeah. I just think it's a really cool design because, like, I think the second side of it is actually pretty nuanced in how good it ends up being. Because if you use it too early and they're able to, like, yes, maybe you knock them off of an objective or two objectives even, but they're going to be able to push in ways that they want to push. So... I'm really interested to see how this ends up going, and I'm interested to see how often that second condition is selected. I almost wish the first side of it was a little bit different, because I feel like it's always going to be useful to just push a fighter because it's distraction. But I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Great card. Great card. We could keep talking about it, but let's jump to Invisible Hunter. Remove a friendly Autopoddle from the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
That fighter is not out of action. this card persists until the end of the round. When this card no longer persists, place that fighter in an empty hex not adjacent to any enemy fighters. You cannot play this card in round three.
Oh boy. This card is really, really interesting.
Yeah. So my immediate reaction is like, obviously you get like the Skaven, Grimwatch, Skeleton vibes, but the cool thing is that you can do something cool with Autopoddle or maybe make a risky play because there's no limit to like move or wound tokens, right?
Yeah. Or
charge tokens rather, excuse me. So you can like take a risky play. If it doesn't work out, see ya.
Yeah. You can charge onto an objective, give somebody a move token, inspire your warband, and then leave.
Yep.
It's great.
I mean, not only this is a perfect get out of jail free card. Yeah. The only challenge with this card is that Autopoddle has to be alive. And while he is a very defensive fighter, there are going to be games where you just lose him immediately, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I like that it doesn't work in the third round. That's really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, there may be situations when, you know, you only have six fighters. So there may be situations when you've lost a couple fighters that you actually need Autopoddle to be on the board holding an objective, doing something, you know, meaningful. So, you know, there may be times when you don't end up using it. So I guess we'll have to see exactly how useful it is. I feel like it's great in the first round and then it kind of tapers.
Yeah, I think so. One of the things that I would want to point out is this card no longer persists until the end of the round.
Yeah.
So it's the same time as this is after scoring. So you don't get to just like pop up, place him on objective and say, I have like three objectives.
Right.
No, like you score and then he comes back.
Yeah. So most of the time it's really just to keep him safe or reposition him. But, you know, a lot of the time the repositioning aspect could be really good. You could start him on an objective. You could start him, you know, in range of a couple targets that you want to lock up. So I think there's definitely some utility here. We're just going to have to see whether it's worth a slot, you know?
Yeah. I definitely think it's an interesting card, one that I like, one that I want to be good, but one that I also have this like rule in this game where like I try not to take cards restricted to fighters unless I know those fighters. I'm going to get a lot out of them. And I'm not sure if that's going to be the case here. I think it's up in the air. I'm like 50-50 right now. So
I think I'm going to try it and then I won't be surprised if I end up cutting it out. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I'm at the point where I mentally tried it and I'm not sure I want it.
Fair enough.
So, but you know, starting off pretty strong. I mean, the first three cards we talk about are crazy good, or not the first two at least, and then Invisible Hunter is I think one of the ones where you have to think about a little bit. But looking strong already. Let's go to Light of the Stars reaction. So does really well with the reaction surge from earlier. Play this after an opponent plays a gambit. That gambit deals no damage.
Yeah. So this is a little situational. I guess it just depends on how much ping damage there is.
That's really all it is.
Yeah.
Our gambit's going to do you damage. I mean, think about it. You could deny a rebound.
Yeah, that's true.
That's pretty neat.
Rebound, a lot of spells, or some spells, I guess.
Well, I don't know if it works on gambit spells.
I mean, spells are gambits, so.
That's true. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if Curse Breakers make a comeback or magic gets stronger, then maybe you mess around with it.
But I think it's probably a little too situational to see a lot of play. So I guess we have our first quasi-dud.
I don't know if it's a dud, though.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think in the right meta, this is very good.
Right. So. In the snare meta, I mean, we actually did just get the primacy ping damage.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. So. This stops snare.
Yeah.
The stop snare that stops prideful, whatever it was from the other day. So, I don't know.
It's a nice tool to have in their belt if they ever need it. So.
I think that's the most accurate way to define this card. It's a great tool in the tool belt, in the gadget belt, if you will. And when the time comes and you use it, it's going to be great. But it's not the auto include you would hope.
Yeah.
But this next card might be.
I know it's going to be in my deck.
Yeah, it's... I mean, just with the name alone.
Yeah.
Lords of Space and Time. With a name like that, you know this shit's going to be good, dude. Man, choose one friendly fighter that is not adjacent to any enemy fighters. Place that fighter in the same hex as an objective token in enemy territory not adjacent to any enemy fighters, then give that fighter one move token.
Yeah. Are you tired of Hidden Paths and Beast Trail being too situational?
Right. I mean, we just talked about Will of the Slant.
Yeah.
You know, this works great with treasure hunters. Yeah. Dominant position, like, man, this card is nuts. Your opponent can maybe try to play around it, but it's hard. It's hard to just babysit every objective in the back. There's no way.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about it is, you know, you do have to kind of use it on a fighter that isn't, you know, in the middle of stuff because they can't have anyone next to them. And then when they teleport, they can't have anyone next to them either. So it is possible for some warbands, particularly the ones that are larger and better at holding objectives anyway, to block this. But it's still really, really good.
Yeah, but block for how long?
Well,
at one point, there's going to be a moment where one of your friendly fighters can do it.
Right.
Because there's no limit. It can be anyone. Autopoddle, Kikitaka, Claktrox, Skinks. I mean.
And they can have a charge token. They can have anything.
Yeah, so, it doesn't matter. Yeah. They're too deep. It's a lord of space and time.
Right.
He just instant transmission across the board.
Yeah. No, it's really.
This is auto include.
Yeah.
Next card.
Mm-hmm.
Sotek's Venom. It's a poison card. Whoa.
Yeah.
Poison synergy. And not that it matters much.
But, yeah, not really.
Reaction. Again, another reaction. Play this during a friendly fighter's attack action. After the deal damage step, give the target one move token.
This is so good.
Game's pretty good to me. Yeah.
Yeah. This would be great for anybody, but because you also have Autopoddle like doing his thing, and you can take like the Barblade and Net if you want, and you could take the, you know, lead bone, or what's the one you took in the Magors?
Energy drain.
Like, there's so many ways to lock people down. This is really cool.
Yeah, I really like this card. Some counterplay here. So obviously this warband just destroys Molag. I love it. But some counterplay. There's a Hrothgorn card that allows you to remove a move token.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, if we start seeing a lot of like cards that start inducing move tokens, that card stock goes up a lot.
Yeah, certainly could.
But I really like this one. I think it's a B, like a 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
Because the attack action can miss, so you can't rely on it. Mm-hmm. And your opponent can always roll better. But I like the idea that it's there. Is it worth taking over positioning ploys or speed ploys? Remains to be seen.
I think it depends. I think it's going to be a very specific choice if you do take it. And it probably does compete with Energy Drain and Lead Bone Dust pretty directly. So it kind of depends what you think is better. With all the ranged attacks, I feel like this could be better than Energy Drain, but it's going to be close, I think.
Yeah, well, because Energy Drain just objective, boom, done. Yeah. But you might, in this case, you might want that objective.
Yeah, and the nice thing is, like, in the first round, if you know you're going to make a bunch of attacks anyway, it doesn't really matter which attack hits and gives the move token. Because you're not doing a ton of one-shotting other than Claktrox. So. And you have so much range that, like, you're going to be attacking randomly as you move on to objectives and stuff anyway.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you might as well make a charge if you can. Right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Good points. Good points. I like it.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid we've reached our first dud.
Okay.
Like, true dud.
Tell me about it.
I want to say it's a mystery, but it's not. But let's talk about Tepok's mystery. Pick one opponent. That player picks one objective card from their hand and shuffles that objective card back into their objective deck. Then that player draws one objective card.
Yeah. So it's really cool, but I feel like maybe half the time it helps your opponent.
Yeah, in this game, this is not good. Like, I can see why this could be good.
Yeah.
In maybe some other game like Hearthstone or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or whatever, but not here.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
we try.
I guess it's okay, but yeah, it's just not worth one of your own cards. Yeah. Just go to the next one.
My thoughts exactly. So this is the first card that has the keyword asterism.
Mm-hmm.
So asterisms are unique style mechanics. for the warband. This is the Bulwark Celestial. Friendly fighters cannot be driven back. This effect persists until the end of the round or until another asterism card is played. So very reminiscent of Cycle from Worm's Bat.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think?
I think it's okay. I think the thing about this warband, I think there would be some warbands where this would be much better. But I think a lot of the time, if this warband gets hit, they're going to lose fighters. And so the driven back just isn't as appealing to me for that reason.
Agreed. Like, if this said all fighters on guard, I'm like, yo, this is great.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you're absolutely correct. If you're hitting, you're more likely you're killing. So on four of the six, and sometimes, you know, all of them except Claxrock, you know, because yeah, 3 damage is pretty easy to get to. So we'll go to our next asterism, the Great Drake. And with a name like that, you know it's going to be good.
Oh, boy.
Also happens to be my favorite rapper / artist in general.
Okay.
So that boy Drake. +1 dice to friendly fighters, range 1 attack actions. This effect persists until the end of the round or until another asterism card is played.
And with a card you like this, why would you play another asterism?
Yeah. You remember how we were like thinking about like their attack actions weren't that good?
Yeah.
Well, now we know why.
Yeah.
Because the Great Drake is going to support them for 1 round and all their attack actions, including Claxrock, go through the roof.
Yeah, this is pretty incredible.
Bro, think about an inspired Claxrock. Claxrock.
Mm-hmm.
3 smash, 3 damage, reaction, 3 fury, 2 damage. Or 1 damage.
Actually, no. I think the dice might be a modifier, so I don't know if it works on...
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it doesn't work on the reaction. Yeah. You're right. I mean, you know, a man can dream.
But this is incredible. This is like... I mean, +1 dice to 4 attacks, which is basically what it's going to be. Or I guess 3 attacks if you go first. But... man, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent card. Auto include. Probably. I think more often than not, really. Next asterism. There's only 3. And one of them wasn't that appealing. So let's go to the Hunter Steed. +1 move to friendly fighters. This effect persists until the end of the round or another asterism card is played.
So this one is okay.
Yeah. No, I like this one. This is good.
Yeah. It's just not, you just would never play it if you have the other one. So that's kind of what limits it, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct in that you probably don't want to play both of these in the same round. So it might clog up your hand a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, and yeah, you can take Outrun Death now and then Spectral Wings.
Yeah.
And that's probably all the move you need because your Warband is moving 4 and 5, except for Claxrock, who moves 3 and 4. So it's a good card. But when compared to the other options in the season, probably not.
Yeah, I agree. But man, they have a lot of good
cards. Does it. They have a lot of great ploys, man. We went over 10 cards, and I think like 4 or 5 of them were like, these are good. Like what?
Yeah, I would say there were only 3 we didn't like, and then 7 of them that we thought were pretty legit.
Either good or had at least some use, right? Yeah, so
that's interesting because you're not going to be able to take them all because you need a lot of other universal stuff like that you're just going to have to take, sort of. So it'll be interesting to see how people decide what to put in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right in that every choice will be, you know, very intentional. But I do think that there are at least 2 cards that are just going to always go.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So generally when you build a deck. And because there are a lot of good universals in Beastgrave and in Direchasm, you're probably going to see maybe 2 to 4 faction-specific cards. On average, I think. Generally, I usually see 2, 3, or 4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
I'm thinking I would take 4 of them almost every time.
Really?
Yeah. I'm thinking Burst from the Shadows, Huanchi's Device, Lords of Space and Time, and the Great Drake.
Yeah, so... I'm wanting to take all 4 of those, but I just... So, you're absolutely correct, and Burst of Shadows is like a no-brainer, and so is probably Huachi's Device.
Yeah. I mean, you'd cut Distraction before you cut Huachi's Device, just in case
that's
it ends
correct,
up being
but
better.
Correct, but you probably would just take 2 Distractions. You know, so... I mean, maybe not, you know. So, even then you have 8 deck slots left, and then what? You're gonna take Spectral Wings, Distraction, maybe Mischievous Spirits, and that's half your ploys.
Yeah.
So then you have to just, and then whatever cards help you score objectives. So there's a lot to think about here. But I think I agree that those four are the strongest, and you would, when building your deck on Underworlds DB or whatever platform you use, you're going to add them, and then you'll have to trim the fat, and you might have to make some hard decisions between the four of these. But yeah, I think you're absolutely correct that those are the top four. Which one's your favorite?
Maybe from a flavor perspective, I think Invisible Hunter is pretty cool. So I'll pick that one. Just being able to disappear Autobottle.
It is neat.
Yeah.
It is neat.
Yeah, it's really cool. How about you?
I'm just going off name alone. Lords of Space and Time.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Very cool card. Very creative and very powerful as well. So,
absolutely. All right, well, let's get into the upgrades. The first upgrade is Adaptive Camouflage. -1 dice to a minimum of 1 from attack actions that target this fighter if the attacker is not adjacent, restricted to Autopoddle, in case you want to make him basically unhittable.
from range, right? So
Yeah.
So it's okay. Yeah. If this was just like all attack actions, yikes. If this was range 1 attack actions, it's still really good.
Right.
I think it's still better than it is in its current form. And so for that reason, I think this is a very balanced card. It's flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many good warbands right now that have range 1 attack actions. And yeah, there are some great ones with range 2 or 3.
Yeah.
But you run into a Crusha or Magors or Ravagers, and then you start, not really seeing the benefit here. Wild Hunt even.
Right.
So mirror matches.
Yeah. Yeah. If maybe he didn't have as many defense dice, if this was like a passive ability of his, it would be cool, but it's just not something you would spend an upgrade slot on.
Agreed.
Yeah. The next one is Astrolith Igniter. Reaction. During a friendly fighter's range 1 or range 2 attack action, before the attack roll, spend 1 glory point. That attack action gains cleave until it has been resolved. Restricted Kixi Taka.
Yeah, you can go ahead and take this one because I know you love cleave.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've warmed up to cleave a little bit since some of my hating on it. But in this case, it's just way too... first of all, you're not going to spend a glory point to get cleave.
You make it sound like it's just like so silly.
It really is. And it's only on... Although, actually, I guess it's any fighter. I guess that's something. It's any fighter. It's not just this fighter. I guess I missed that initially, sort of. So,
well, it's restricted to Kiki Taka.
So it has to go on Kiki Taka, but he can buff anyone's attack with cleave. So correct. That actually is pretty decent, and that probably is worth spending a glory on. But
exactly,
I still just don't think I take it because I don't think cleave is that great.
Yeah. What I was saying is that, Kiki Taka has to be alive, which makes this card a little complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is like a force multiplier in theory. Right. And the cool thing is that there is no limit. Like, if he's alive and you make 4 attack actions.
Exactly.
All 4 of them can have cleave, which is kind of cool. Super situational. Probably meta dependent. And if you got the glory to spend, which you probably do, because everyone does nowadays with the Mortis Relics.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a bad card. I don't know. So I don't think it makes my top 10, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that probably reason enough to not really spend more time on it. But I do think that it's something to consider. And for that reason alone, I appreciate the card.
And I like the design. I guess it's like, it's cool that he has like abilities. Like maybe these are like his priest abilities because he's not really a wizard. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I guess also because he's holding the orb.
Yeah. Yeah. The next one is Cloak of Feathers +2 move. When this fighter makes a move action, it can move through occupied hexes and cannot be dealt damage by lethal hexes. It must end its move action in an empty hex. Restricted for Kixi Taka. He just loves upgrades, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the first 3 upgrades, all 3 of them are restricted. I think we all know our feelings on cards like these.
Yeah.
he's a centerpiece. He's important. He's integral to your game plan. He's going to die, though, at one point.
Right. And we have another card if that's available. So.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe you don't want to take Savage Speed with him because of the defense, but like Spectral Wings, Outrun Death. I don't know if you need more than that.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just go to the next one then. It is Heaven Blessed Weapon, +1 dice, and knock back 1 to this fighter's ranged attack, range 1 attack actions.
I like dice.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, this one's
I like this one's really Black Truck a lot.
Yep. You get this and the Great Drake, and man, it's time for some pain.
Dude, yeah, this with the Great Drake is a 4 smash 3 damage attack.
Yeah, it's a dead whatever you're hitting.
But the cool thing is you can put this on Huachi as well. So you maybe Clackjaw goes down, then you've got a 3 smash 2 damage attack.
Yeah.
With his melee javelin. So there's a backup plan here as well, and unfortunately Kikitaka's attacks aren't range 1, but you know, the fact that it can go on 2 of your fighters, most importantly, your most powerful fighter offensively, is awesome.
Yeah, it's also not awful on, like, Zepic. Or does anyone else have a range 1 attack?
Both the Skinks do.
Okay.
So yeah. Tok and Zepic both have a Moonstone Club.
Yeah, so it's better than nothing. And I think you're probably going to take at least the Amberbone Sword, maybe another weapon. So, you know, it's worth taking for sure. The next one is Herald of the Old Ones. Upgrade, you can reroll 1 defense dice in each friendly Skink's defense roll if that fighter is within 3 hexes of this fighter. Restricted Kixitaka.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
So again, we see Kixitaka as this force multiplier, right? Like, yeah. He's kind of the linchpin. So I know that I mentioned that I didn't really like Cloak of Feathers, but the fact that I was warming up to the idea of Astrolith Igniter, this one is a much better effect.
Yeah.
Essentially, making your objective holders more reliable, or more survivable, excuse mm-hmm. me, is amazing. I mean, this, imagine like Autopoddle, 3 dice, three dodge, 1 reroll. You know, like, because he's a skink.
And it works for Kixitaka as well. So,
correct.
That's pretty nice.
Correct, because he is within himself.
Yep.
So just this card alone is Kixitaka is 2 dodge, 1 reroll. And then you think about everyone else that can potentially benefit from it. Whether you plan for it, it just so happens to exist that way. I think it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. The next one is Selfless Sacrifice. Reaction. During an attack action that targets this fighter, after the deal damage step, if this fighter will be taken out of action, this fighter makes an attack action. Restricted Skink. I'm glad it doesn't work on Clackdrock.
Yeah, Clackdrock.
That would be a nightmare.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I like this card. And my challenges with it is that this is an upgrade. I think that's where I'm at.
Yeah, you definitely telegraph it when you put it on the fighter. And then they get to decide whether or not to attack. But like, I don't think it's a bad card, like in a faction deck or something. I'm sure it would see play, but I don't think you actually take it in a real deck.
Yeah, if we're talking faction deck, then this faction deck alone is insane. But
yeah, that's true.
I see the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your best target is probably Kixitaka or Kikitaka, however you want to say it. But I don't know. Probably. I'm not feeling it.
Next one is Spawning Bond. Reaction, after another friendly skink is pushed from a hex within 3 hexes of this fighter, push this fighter 1 hex. Restricted to skink. So that's pretty interesting given the, you know, all the pushes that this warband is going to take.
Yeah, and I get the idea that, like, you know, they're instinctively linked because they are in the same, like, spawn and whatever, but and spawn for non-Seraphon familiar people is that, you know, these fighters are hatched or spawned in, like, I guess in spawns, and then some spawns are blessed so that, you know, they're individuals and are, you know, better equipped or more talented than others. So I get the idea here. They've been training and growing together their whole life, and it makes sense flavorful wise.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think my challenge is that it's restricted to a skink, and most of the skinks are one-shottable.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I think there's interesting stuff that you can do if you put it on someone and then you push your own fighters around. You can get extra pushes, but yeah, it's just a little too...
It's like a one-use type
thing. Yeah. It's almost like an upgrade version of sidestep, which isn't awful, but...
No, it's not.
Yeah. It's interesting. The next one is Supreme Predator upgrade, restricted to Clactroc. This fighter is a hunter. This fighter cannot be a quarry. Each enemy fighter is a quarry. You can reroll one dice, and this fighter's attack action rolls if the target is a quarry. So basically, it's just a reroll for him.
It's a reroll for him, and he also benefits from all the other cards we've mentioned.
Yeah.
Savage Visage also works really well for him. We talked about that one last episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it stacks too. So, yeah, Clactroc is probably the fighter you want a Voltron. And this card does a really good job at Voltroning him.
And it also really unlocks all the other Hunter Quarry stuff for you if you wanted to go that direction. You'd probably have to want to have those cards anyway, like maybe Victimize, which maybe you don't take with the Great Drake, but maybe it would be the second one you take if you were feeling like a lot of accuracy. And then maybe this would unlock it. It's full potential for you, but I don't know. I feel like there's so much accuracy that just came out that maybe you just skip this one, but...
You could. You could. I do like the fact that you can play into hunters, though, because you've got four hunters, potentially five with this card.
Right.
So there is some cool avenues for you to take the warband into. So I like it. I think it's good. It's a very good card for Clactroc, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, they have a ton of accuracy so far.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just feel like he doesn't need it, but okay.
I think that two smash, it, you know, can be frustrating sometimes, but
yeah, I guess a two smash one reroll is fine.
Yeah.
You know,
the next one is Unfeeling Resilience upgrade. When this fighter is dealt damage, reduce that damage by one to a minimum of one. These guys just keep on giving.
These are good. Yeah. Clactroc is Clactroc is the gift that keeps on giving. That's funny. Yeah. But for real though, but for real though, like this is. This wild.
So obviously it's incredible on Clactroc.
Yeah, incredible.
But it's not amazing on the rest of them.
Well, it's okay. So what I'm guessing is you're probably going to give, you know, Kikitaka a wound upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah,
right?
Probably.
Because you want him to live. And then you put this on him as a backup option, maybe, or maybe this is your intended target, and now it takes maybe three attacks to kill him rather than two, or maybe two instead of one.
Right, and this is definitely a good card. You'll definitely take this one and probably Great Fortitude or, you know, Scavenged Armor or Deserve Confidence, maybe three of them total. So it's obviously really good. These kind of cards gain value when they start turning, you know, what would normally be two hits into four hits, or, you know, maybe even more for some, like Rothkorn or something. But when you only have three wounds, I've found that usually they end up being about the same as having just a plus one wound card, which of course is really, really good. But kind of like how the Lumineth have this card, and it's okay for them, but usually it just means it ends up being about the same as plus one health. And I think that a lot of the time that'll be the experience. Unless it goes on Clactroc early, you know.
Yeah. It's good, man. I mean, I'm just thinking about how awesome Clactroc's going to be in the regular game and Arena Mortis.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This guy is he's going to destroy people in Arena Mortis because the rule of one, like, it doesn't matter because these such good
these are all cards. His cards, yeah.
It's amazing.
That's funny. The last one is Unhesitating, plus one move or plus two move if they're a skink.
Is good.
Yep. This is why you don't need the other plus one move cards.
That's exactly right. You don't need Savage Speed because you've got Unhesitating. And so when five of your six fighters get a plus two move card, what's not to like?
Yeah. And even if you put it on Clactroc and he only gets plus one move, he's still moving five or six, I think.
It's four or five.
Yeah. Still really, really fast for a guy like that. So,
I mean, he's a dinosaur, you know.
That's true.
He's, man, some good cards overall.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we weren't as positive about the upgrades as we were about the gambits and objectives. No. But, dude, there are still some great upgrades in here. Which one's your favorite?
Probably the... I think I like the one that goes on the leader and then gives that reroll buff. I think that's the coolest one.
Herald of the Old Ones?
That one's really cool.
That's a really cool card, for sure. Man, I got to stick to theme here, though, man. I'm an aggro guy at heart. And so I'm trying to debate with their... You know what? It's got to be... Heavenly Blessed Weapon is pretty neat, I think, for accuracy.
Yeah.
Because I think Supreme Predator is obviously a good card.
Sure.
But Unhesitating is great, too, because I'm a big fan of the speed package. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to pick one, man. These guys got some great stuff.
Yeah, they really did. It'll be interesting to see how many of these cards end up making the cut compared to all the really good universals that we have. Because I can think of a lot of universals that I want to take.
Yeah.
But I also want to take a lot of these. So it's cool. It's
really interesting in Underworlds. Like, there are moments where you have factions like the Sepulchral Guard or maybe, you know, I don't know, like Despoilers or Reavers, where you don't take very many. Well, actually, Despoilers not true. And maybe Reavers and Spoilers not a good example, but let's just use one for now. The Guard, where like there are not very many, and Wormspat actually, there are not very many good faction cards.
Yeah.
Right? So it's easier to build decks sometimes because you very quickly know whether it's a good deck or a bad deck.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are warbands like Thorns of the Briar Queen, Grimwatch, Starblood Stalkers, Lady Harrow's Mournflight, where you look at all these cards and you're like, they have a lot of good cards that I kind of want, and I'm not really sure if I can fit them all. And sometimes that's a trap, because you can make your deck less efficient because you're like, ooh, new shiny works for my warband type of situation.
Yeah.
So I think that the hard part here, it's almost harder than having a warband with very little good faction specific cards, like, because you're going to have to make some tough choices, and if you don't make the right ones, it'll hurt you in your games. Something to consider, I think.
Yeah, they still probably end up being more powerful than those other factions, but there is definitely a little more thought that has to go into it because you have more options.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are great for Alliance.
Oh, yeah. I see
the Alliance League coming up. I think Tommy might come in for the final with Seraphon. That'd be funny. But
I bet that'll be interesting to see how they stack up. But it's also interesting to think about them in the current meta. Like, they're pretty good at Demolog. They have a lot of control stuff. I think they're probably very good into crushes because they're going to shut a crusher down at some point.
They going to shut a crusher down.
Yeah.
That's right. No, you're absolutely correct. I think the cool thing about this warband, and one that I like a lot, is, yeah, there's some obviously powerful stuff, but that's goes for in every warband.
Yeah.
I think what I like about these guys is they have the tools to do what they need to do and make sure that they have a chance in every game, regardless of matchup.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, interestingly, their worst matchups might be against the larger warbands that are able to sort of block them and fight over them for the objective game and probably be slightly better at it, if you think about like Thorns or Gits or Grimwatch. But I think particularly against the smaller warbands, they're going to excel, which is kind of timely for the current meta. So that's pretty cool.
Agreed. And you know, the interesting thing is this warband has, well, yeah, you're right, right? Like, in a way, they're very, so there are going to be moments or games where, like, sometimes you get blown over because if some attacks go through and you got a bunch of 2 and 3 wound fighters, like, you can lose a lot of fighters pretty quickly. And so that, I think, is going to be very interesting to navigate around and against. I also think you're absolutely right that as good as they are at holding objectives, they're probably not good into another hold objective warband. Like, I can see the Grimwatch being a hard matchup for this warband.
Yeah.
I can see Thorns of the Byre Queen being a hard matchup. I can see Gits being hard just through sheer weight of numbers, right? But, but then I also look at, like, crushes, like you mentioned, Hrothgorn and Molog, and you can kind of shut those fighters down. So I wonder if we're going to go, if these guys end up being meta dominant, which I think they're going to definitely make a very large splash, if not impact. I think we're going to, like, go back to, like, a meta where it's just like the 4, 5, 6, 7 fighter warbands. Because if you're locking down smaller warbands or warbands that rely on one or two fighters, it's going to be challenging.
Yeah, it may be. It'll be. I wonder. I'm really not sure what it'll do. I think we're going to have to see. I think that it's just really interesting. Like, if these guys are so good that they shut down Crushes and they shut down Hrothgar and Molag a little bit, does that mean that the larger warbands and maybe the medium warbands like the Dread Pageant and Lumineth like become even better? Or
yeah.
Do these maybe the Seraphon are actually going to beat up on the Lumineth and Dread Pageant too, which seems reasonably likely to me. It's really interesting.
It's interesting. Yeah. It is. I think you're right. Like, I think these guys do beat up on the Dread Pageant and Miori's Purifiers, but I also think Ravagers have a better game into Seraphon than the other two, right? And Ravagers are one of the weaker warbands in terms of representation in the current meta. I know that I'm a little biased, but I think like ranged attack warbands are going to do well. I think like,
yeah,
you know, we saw some support for magic. So maybe Cursebreakers come back and like fulminating attacks. Like, even if you lock down a ranged fighter, it doesn't matter if they're within 3 range, they can hit you.
Yeah.
Same goes for Profiteers, you know, like 2 damage at range with cleave. Pretty solid to me.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It'll be interesting to see how much of a like corner of the meta they carve out, because if people start trying to tech to beat them, that'll be interesting. And then I think we've been talking about how they're going to be good against the smaller warbands, but it also sort of depends what they tech for. If they don't take, you know, some of their ability to lock people up and things like that, I bet they can lean more into the objective play and things like that and, you know, still have a pretty good game. So I think they're going to be very strong. Looking forward to see the impact.
Yeah. So if you had to summarize your thoughts, well, we already did a little bit. So I guess if you had to summarize how you think you'd play them, how do you think you'd play them?
So I think I would play them with the speed package, because I want to be able to reach 3 objectives early, you know, as well as score reliable glory. What I don't want is an enemy moving onto the third objective, you know, the obvious third objective too early and blocking out my inspire. So I definitely want to have the speed there, you know, for that double reason. And then I think I'm going to take, you know, easy to score cards like Swift Capture and Hidden Purpose, and then probably Show of Force just because it's, you know, so good. Maybe they're double reaction one instead, something like that. But Show of Force is also going to help towards the Great Plan. So then I think I'd take the Great Plan and Dominant Position, Path to Victory, Underdog probably. You know, I'd have to figure out exactly what that end phase looks like, because I am going to need to try to fit in the Great Plan. But I think that's what the objective deck would look like. I think it would focus on holding objectives, because that's what I'm going to have to do to inspire anyway. And then I feel like the gambits would be pushes and accuracy, and then the upgrades would be a lot of damage and accuracy. Maybe a little health.
Yeah, that's a good way. I think I would do it something similar. I definitely think you want to just focus on the objectives, the inspire, and then of course the scoring. So natural synergy there. As much as I like the ability to lock up fighters, I think that I would rather just go for accuracy and damage. So I think I would like kind of do a split where I'm just going to try to get on those objectives as fast as I can, hold them where I can, and then go to town with Claktrock and maybe some support with Huachi and Kikitaka. But I can also see another variant of this warband where you just kind of chill, hold objectives, and then just control. And that's really interesting to me, because, you know, if you talk about the playstyle cycle or circle, like the rock, paper, scissors style of the way that strategies work, you know, while aggro beats objective and objective beats control and control beats aggro, if you're able to like control and hold objectives, then you're potentially like in a really good spot to counter almost everything. And I find that very interesting. Like, obviously there's going to be situations, again,
yeah,
because that's just the way this game functions, where like you just lose like 2-3 fighters immediately, and that's gonna suck.
And that is gonna be their weakness, is gonna be aggro. Like any control hold objective deck, is their main weakness is gonna be aggro.
Agreed, but I think that if you can be smart about positioning and maybe you get the right cards, you can deny some kills. Like, you know, we were talking about how that Autopoddle card that you thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. It's not really that powerful, but if you're worried about, you know, giving up easy glory, just boop, there he's gone.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. And you could take like now, 3 distractions and 3 ways to lock people up and do all kinds of crazy stuff like that.
Yeah. I think you could go very, very passive and do really well with them.
Yeah.
And then of course you've got Claktrok, who's like the ultimate bodyguard. So
yeah,
I'm really liking this warband. Obviously, you know, as a kid, we've all played with dinosaurs and everyone thinks they're cool. In fact, I wanted to play them for Age of Sigmar, but I just, the Saurus Warriors are really outdated. But if they all looked like Claktrok, you know, might be something different. But
yeah, hopefully these are like a herald of a new Lizardmen army to come, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the rule book, the army book came out, I think, mid last year. I bought it, but it, unfortunately, there was no updates to the models. But hopefully we'll see it. I just feel like they're due, and what's not to like about dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, I think they're really cool.
Yeah. Well, I think that does it. Check out our end phase episode. We didn't mention this at the beginning of the episode, but we will be doing an end phase episode with Tommy Conboy. Unfortunately, Jonathan can't make it to this one. He has his fiance's birthday this weekend.
Yeah.
So decided to bring the Seraphon enthusiast, Tommy Conboy, to kind of talk about how he would build his first Seraphon deck. So it's not one to miss. It is Patreon exclusive content. So look forward to that.
Yeah, very cool. I'm excited to listen to it. I know that Tommy's been looking forward to this warband for a while, and I can't imagine he's disappointed. So I'm very interested to see what the first deck is going to be like. So,
yeah, I'm actually looking forward to his reaction when Warhammer community drops all the cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's just going to be spamming our group chat.
I know. It'll be cool to see what cards end up making the cut for him, along with all the powerful universals.
Yeah, yeah. And I told him, I said, you know, like for this end phase, like we're not trying to make like the uber competitive deck. I just want to see where your head's at.
Yeah.
What cards you're thinking, and you know, hopefully our patrons, you know, can learn something from it and then kind of build off that or maybe move in a completely different direction.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I wanted to mention is that we actually reached 30 patrons recently, and that's a kind of a milestone. So I wanted to thank everybody, and just really cool.
Yeah. I was talking to, actually, we were talking about it this morning on Discord, and I was actually mind blown that we've got to 30.
Yeah.
I actually never, for some reason, I never thought we'd get this big. And so, as Jonathan mentioned, thank you so much for your love and support. It really does keep us going, because there are days where, and weeks like this one, where you have to like record a lot of content over a course of days, takes up your evenings, and then you have to write a bunch of articles. And sometimes you're like, man, like I wish I could slow down a little bit. But then you think about it and you're like, you know, all these people like love us and support us. We need to get this content out. So obviously, thank you for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly helped us get through the last year or so. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we started in like September.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's, yeah, I can't wait to see where we're at this September. But really, it's been a great motivator, because we tried, if you notice, our content didn't slow down during COVID, and that's because we were really motivated. But as COVID kept getting drawn out and all these events kept getting canceled, it was just like, man, how do we stay motivated? And then, you know, the patrons really helped us out. So yeah. Honestly, thank you.
And they're going to have to keep helping us out, because there's no Nova this year. So,
dude, yeah, I am so bummed about no Nova.
Yeah. So really appreciate it. Just wanted to mention that. 30 is like a milestone, and I guess we'll talk about it again at 40. So
40. Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, that is going to be it for this episode. Once again, thank you to our patron supporters. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can do so at patreon.com/pathtoglory. You can find all of our blog content at pathtoglorypodcast.com, where we will have written versions of these card reviews up as well. You can, if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, please let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at Path to Glory Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. As always, thanks for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.
What did the dinosaur say to the cashier? Keep the climate change.